Hey, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing classrooms become bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what I do on this podcast. I share some thoughts on that particular topic. Today, it's barely about creativity, but trust me, it gets into it. And it's the idea of being a better consumer. In particular, a better consumer of information. It's become a huge issue, this thing where people are sending and sharing and just believing fake news. And I've seen it with students, I've seen it with adults. It was especially bad around election time. And so there's a concept of confirmation bias that goes on where you tend to confirm what you already believe. And so any information that confirms it, you believe that ahead of time. And I think that's a lot of what goes on. So the topic is this: fake news is a real problem. Here's how students can solve it. And ahead of time, if you go to the post, I've created a sketch video, or a sketchy video, I like to call them, kind of sharing this process as well. So if you check it out, you can also find it on my YouTube channel, which is spencervideos.com. But anyway, here are the thoughts. I used to teach a class called photojournalism. I usually referred to it as digital journalism, though, because people assumed we were some kind of a photography class. After all, you know, the word photo is right there, and not a lot of people kind of know what a photojournalist does. And often a photojournalist is exactly that. They are a journalist who just focuses on photography. But for this class, we expanded it. We went with something much, much bigger. Students created videos, podcasts, documentaries, and blogs, and they would create these media packages with the goal of sharing their work with an authentic audience. Now, I can see where a lot of classes in this style would have done kind of school newspapers, but we went a more global route. We wanted students to think more than just, you know, about their school sports or the cafeteria food or whatever. We wanted them to make sense out of their world. And on the surface, this might not seem all that practical. After all, newspapers are slashing their budgets and laying off staff, so why teach an elective class in a subject that doesn't connect to a decent job market, right? I mean, why would this class be vital? But I'm convinced that it was as vital as my computer class, where I was teaching things in a much more STEM focus. And it's because this: whether we like it or not, we are all citizen journalists. We are all researchers. We are all sharing information online and publishing it on social media. We are all curating and producing content, even if only a fragment of the population creates videos or podcasts or blog posts. Because here's the thing: social media makes us publishers. If we participate in it at all, we are publishing. Social media is a fusion of space. That's the social side of social media. And publishing, that's the media side of social media. And that fusion together is what makes it a different type of publishing. Although it can feel like a place to hang out, every social media platform uses elements of traditional media. Just look at the terms: subscribers, followers, newsfeed, publish. These words are scattered all over every single social media platform. And because of that, you are a citizen journalist. Now, when you hear that term, often we kind of think about it as a civics metaphor. And even when we talk about digital citizenship, we kind of neglect that civics part, right? We don't think about the, I guess, political side of it or social side. But the reality is, being a citizen journalist is more than just focusing on laws and government and politics. It's how you make sense out of your world. It's how you treat the people around you. It's what you choose to share and not share. And so whatever you're sharing online, even if it's just curating cat videos, you are participating in this network of social media. And the thing is this, the gatekeepers are gone, which means it's easier than ever to publish your work to the world. Now, this is exciting. I get to write a blog post a few times a week. I get to make sketchy videos and post them on YouTube and Facebook. I get to record this podcast right here. I am, for all intents and purposes, a big fan of digital media. I love what I get to do with it. But there's a cost. It's also easier than ever to spread misinformation. And fake news has become a real issue in recent times. There's a disturbing trend in the last election. Mainstream news versus fake news. They were charted out. This was a BuzzFeed, which again is not considered the greatest journalist around, right? But they actually had a really good graph showing the difference between Facebook engagement in election stories that were mainstream versus fake news. And because fake news is so outrageous, it either angers people or excites people or whatever, and they are much, much more likely to share it. That, you know, bond measure that is about to be passed in your neighborhood, that article isn't going to get shared on Facebook in the same way that, say, a fake story about a presidential candidate will. And what happened is somewhere around August, late July, early August, the fake news began to surpass mainstream news on Facebook for election stories. And that is a huge issue. But it goes beyond simply elections and politics. I bring that up not meaning to be political, but to point out that often we run into this issue with students. I hear students who believe certain things in science or believe certain things in history, and they're straight up wrong. They think things about sports because they saw a fake news article, or they think there's a new technology out, like this hoverboard that was a fake video. And it gets shared all the time, and people who don't know any better are going to share it. And like I mentioned, we see this with our students all the time. According to a Stanford study, and you can find the link on my blog as well, only 25% of high school students were able to identify an accurate news story when also given a fake one. Students had a hard time distinguishing between real and fake photographs and authentic and staged videos. Now, researchers use the words bleak and dismaying to describe it, but it's not going away anytime soon, and that is a very real problem. So how do we fix it? Well, I'm going to share a 5-step process that I've used with students. A word of caution, it's not perfect, and there are probably other models out there, but I thought I would share it with you just in case you might want to use it. And so we call it the 5 C's of critical consuming. So here they are. Number 1, context. Look at the context of the article. When was it written? Where does it come from? Have the events changed since then? Is there any new information that could change your perspective and give you a better sense of the truth? Number 2 is credibility. Check the credibility of the source. Does the site have a reputation for journalistic integrity? Does the author cite credible sources? Or is it satirical? Is it something like The Onion? Is it on a list of fake news sites? Is it just meant to inflame people and not share the truth? Is it deliberately confusing? Or maybe it's just an advertisement posing as a real news story. Students need to know that. They need to know that when they look online, that it's real. In fact, I like to tell students to check the URL because there's a lot of fake news sites out there that have the wrong URL. There's an ABC News one that's just like that. It turns out not to be the ABC News that we're thinking of. And it's essentially a, quote, satire site that doesn't really do satire. It's just deliberately spreading misinformation and telling lies. Number 3, construction. Analyze the construction of the article. What is the bias? Are there any loaded words? Any propaganda techniques? Any omissions that you should look out for? Can you distinguish between the facts and opinions, or is it simply all speculation? Number four, corroboration. Now I have to teach my students what it means to corroborate something, but the idea here is to corroborate the information with other credible news sources. Make sure it's not the only source making the claim, and if it is, there's a good chance it's actually not true. And number five, compare. Compare it to other news sources to get different perspectives. Find other credible sources from other areas of the ideological or political spectrum to provide nuance and get a bigger picture of what's actually happening. Now, I tell students this. Essentially, if it seems too good to be true, it might be too good to be true. So check it. Be a critical consumer of information. This isn't easy to do, by the way. This takes years and years. And the truth is, being literate in any sense of the term, and that includes media literacy, being literate takes years. This isn't something you teach in one lesson and then walk away from. Again, if you look at adults, they are just as bad as students are at determining whether something is real or fake. And it comes down to this. When we teach students media literacy and they learn how to consume critically, they also learn how to think critically. And critical thinking citizens are good for democracy. And that, well, that's good for everyone. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast at all, please leave a review on iTunes. That would mean the world to me. The music is from bensound.com. They're not a sponsor or anything. I just love their music and I can give them a shout out every single time because they've got some great stuff that I use in the background of my videos and in this podcast. And just, like I said, really good stuff. So thanks for listening and have a fantastic day.